Welcome back, everyone, and very pleased to introduce our own Owen Maroney for the fluctuation-friendly second law.
So apparently I have a strict timetable so that people can go to lunch. I'm going to be talking about thinking about the foundations of thermal physics, and particularly something about there's this well-known 19th century axiomatic phenomenological thermodynamics, which is a marvelously wonderful, interesting, and great structure with one slight problem that it's wrong. It doesn't work. It doesn't actually provide for fluctuation phenomena. And fluctuation phenomena definitely exist. So what do we do about that? And generally, there's been two approaches. That one is to try and sort of understand this by saying that phenomenological thermodynamics has a restricted domain of validity, and usually there's this kind of words like reliable and continuous is the kind of things that gets added to talk about what that domain of validity is. And the second approach to it is actually saying, well, okay, it's wrong, we now have this sort of atomistic view of the world, and what we should do is just simply say that's our view of the world and try and just reconstruct whatever we get from statistical mechanics. Now, for the record, I think this is the right thing to do. However, I'm going to talk about doing something else. A third way. And the third way is to sort of take the kind of phenomenological thermodynamics and, rather than try and restrict its domain of validity, to extend the range of phenomena it covers. Sort of look at that axiomatic structure and say, well, okay, obviously that axiomatic structure doesn't work. But to what extent could we modify it to actually incorporate fluctuation phenomena? Not try and exclude it and say, well, it just doesn't account for those situations, but actually say to sort of expand it. And this would actually have content in the sense that it actually would have to be a law which predicts the size of fluctuations which occur and their probability. Why do this, given, as I said, I think this is actually the right thing to do? Well, part of the reason is because after about 140 years of working on statistical mechanics, there is no unanimity as to what one should do in terms of deriving a new version from statistical mechanics. There's not even a unanimity as to what statistical mechanics even is or should be in terms of, say, disagreements between Gibbsian approaches and Boltzmannian approaches, whether it's some objective, whether it's about our knowledge. There's actually an awful lot of problems. There's also a lot of issues about the reduction of thermodynamics to statistical mechanics, and that's a particular area of concern, and it's there are problems about this. By putting this maybe in between the two of them, one can say that, well, we extend the range of this to being this, and then one could study the relationship between this fluctuation phenomenological thermodynamics and statistical mechanics. It might give us a handle actually on better to understand what statistical mechanics should be. Also, mainly I do it because I find it fun. It's interesting. Now, this approach was kind of largely inspired by some work done by Szilard in 25, which was sort of developed slightly by Tischer and Key in 63, but I think largely actually hasn't been studied as well as it should be, this possibility. So that's another reason to do it. So what actually does this involve? Well, I'm going to review the kind of phenomenological statements of the second, briefly. Suggest what a generalization could be to incorporate fluctuation phenomena. And then show that actually this generalizes straightforwardly to the Clausius and Carnot formulations of the second law and has all the kind of logical equivalences that we get in the kind of non-fluctuation thermodynamics. Then I'm going to look at sort of entropy, because entropy is kind of seems a useful function. It was introduced. In principle, there are arguments one could do without it, but it seems so extraordinarily useful that it would be very hard not to. And ask, well, you know, what actually happens to entropy when you have fluctuations? This is phenomenological thermodynamic entropy. Find the conditions for its existence with fluctuation law. And here we go. Classic statements. Well, you have Kelvin that states is about heat from a heat bath. Single heat bath converting, extracting heat and converting it to work. Clausius, that you can't get heat to flow from the colder to the hotter. And then, of course, we have Carnot cycles with a heat engine and heat pump, and a maximum efficiency of any heat engine and heat pump. And it's a sort of textbook thing to actually show by means of these sort of diagrams that if you violate any one of these statements, then you actually get violations of all the other statements. And these are the kind of things you can do. So you've got a blob here, this is sort of heat engine, and work goes in, this is heat pump, and it extracts heat from a heat bath and pumps it to a hotter heat bath. And here we've got work heat flowing out of a hot heat bath and going through a heat engine, and work's coming out and some of the heat's going down. And you can show that if these are both reversible ones, but either of these have an efficiency exceeding one of these, then you can translate that into a violation of one of these statements, and backwards and forwards. This particular diagram is an interesting one. We'll put another one in between, another heat back at an intermediate temperature. Well, it doesn't have to be intermediate, actually. And you have heat flowing out of this one into that one, and then the same amount of heat flowing out of this one, and then down there, and you say, well, that overall is going to be a heat engine operating between these two temperatures. And from this, one just actually gets the efficiencies of the engines and heat pumps. Now, the problem is these are all wrong. As I say, this can't be stressed enough. They can be violated with some probability. You can actually turn heat into work with no other effect, but only with some probability. We know that. So restricting the domain of validity is the kind of approach that will say, well, we can do it with some probability, but there's no reliable process. Well, this is a bit of a weasel word here, reliable. What do you mean, reliable? I can make it more exact. With probability 1, that's actually quite strong. We might want to say with probability approaching 1. That actually turns out to be a lot weaker. You can talk about continuously, but suppose if I get probability arbitrarily close to 1, of getting arbitrarily large amounts of heat out, that would be okay with that, but I'd be happy. Suppose continuously operating is another one that comes in here. This is something saying, well, it's in consideration of Maxwell's demons, you know, at some point they come to a jittering halt. It's like, oh, okay, but continuously operating just turns out to be as T goes to infinity, time goes to infinity. If I can get arbitrarily large amounts of work out over a 10 billion year thing, I'm happy. I don't mind. The fact that it's not going to carry on working forever isn't really going to fuss me that much. So maybe that's not really what we're looking at either. And then what this thing is on average. Well, but, and these aren't even actually equivalent to each other. One can show, for example, one can violate this without violating that, and so forth. So I want to actually say, well, rather than just trying, one of the problems also I don't like this is that it doesn't say anything about the known processes that lie outside of the domain of validity. So here's my proposal. It's just, I called towards a fluctuation for any second law because I sort of came across this and was interested in playing around with it. It's a candidate. I think something like this is going to have to be what, if a fluctuation friendly second law is possible, something like this is going to have to be what it is going to be. But there are sufficient things that still need to be worked through to really show whether or not it actually could be a consistent structure. So it's definitely still a work in progress. So here's the proposal. You modify it by having which can occur with probability P unless the probability is less than some function of the heat extracted and the temperature. And one of the assumptions here is that this F is, this is some, the optimum probability for obtaining a particular violation or a particular fluctuation. And it's going to be assumed this F, there must actually be some way one can prepare a physical system that can reach or at least get arbitrarily close to this probability. Because if you couldn't get arbitrarily close to this F, then just that would, so this actually, there must be physical processes that instantiate this F. We can say some things about this F right immediately. If the heat gained is less than zero, it's 1, because that's saying with probability 1, I can convert work to heat. That's quite easy to do to any extent at any temperature. And also, we know that it has to be, as the amount of heat goes up, it has to go, that probability has to go down, because if I have some probability for getting 10 joules of heat from a fluctuation, then I can easily convert that into getting 9 joules by getting 10 joules and throwing 1 joule away. So it's got to be decreasing. It can't go up. I'm going to assume heat baths and reliable reversible heat engines. Connor has to assume the existence of reversible heat engines. I'm just adding the point that they're certain to operate. And here, I'm going to say, assuming that, this statement actually implies these three statements. And each of those three statements implies all the other ones. So all of these statements are, in fact, logically equivalent. In fact, it can even deduce this Q over T from what I just stated already. You can deduce Q over T is the form. How? Well, here's you've got a Clausius fluctuation. We've got a certain quantity of heat that's just spontaneously gone from temperature 1 to temperature 2. And we've got some Fc for a Clausius fluctuation for what that could be. Well, one way of doing that is we get the Kelvin fluctuation. We've extracted some work, and we just put that into a heat pump, and we pump heat up. Now, that's, I said that such a process can be instantiated, and we're assuming the existence of the Carnot engine, so that process can be instantiated. So the optimum probability for getting this, certainly it's got to be no worse than that, because we can get that. Well, that's good. That's one way. But we can also do something else. We can take a fluctuation there. One way of doing that is we can get a Clausius fluctuation and then just run the heat back through a heat engine. And that, if we're assuming this is the optimum, the physical process that instantiates the optimum Clausius fluctuation, then the optimum Kelvin fluctuation can't be worse off, can't be less probable than that. Oh, well, that's good, because now we've got the inequalities on both sides, and that means, provided these doubles and U's and Q's are consistently defined, and they are, then, in fact, we've got to say they're equal. And we can even, from this, plug it in and find out that this particular form takes this form. Which is nice. We then have, here's a heat pump that is a fluctuation pump, so it actually operates with an efficiency better than the Carnot efficiency. But obviously it can only do so with some probability. And we've got a heat engine that has an efficiency better than the Carnot efficiency. Actually, we can see from the previous slide, we actually can put the Carnot efficiency in our previous slide's equation. So here we have the same kind of thing. Here we have a engine and a Kelvin fluctuation. And we can see this is actually going to be equivalent to getting a pump and our hyper-efficient fluctuating engine. So this can be run in both directions. And as this is going in both directions, we've got the inequality on both sides. And we can work the other way around. We can also look at the relationship between the engine and the Clausius violations. So this is a Clausius violation augmenting our heat engine. And here we've got our fluctuating engine producing a Clausius violation. And again, this gets us equalities going both ways, which allows us to constrain it to being equalities. And checking through, we'll find that all these things are consistently defined. We can then show the same things going with pumps. So here we've got a fluctuation augmenting a regular heat pump, making a fluctuation pump. Here we've got a fluctuation pump making a regular Kelvin fluctuation. It goes both ways, the inequality goes both ways, so we can actually show that it's got to be an equivalence between the Kelvin function and the heat pump function. And similarly for pumps and Clausius fluctuations. And We can then also show how engines and pumps are related to each other. And it turns out if you're actually